Welcome to minute 118 of season 3 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1988 Bruce Willis action flick Die Hard, one minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Heather Baxendale of Word of Hellmouth podcast. Welcome back to the show, Heather.
Hello, hello. It's a good time being here today on this fine day.
Yeah, but I think we're going to need some more FBI guys.
The look Powell gives him. like, did you just say that?
Yeah, exactly.
So, absolute repulsion and disgustion. Yeah. So great.
But on the other hand, he knows that he's right. So whatever. Yes. But we'll get there. We'll get there later in this episode.
Indeed.
Minute 118 begins with John coming to a realization and ends with a very wet John getting himself ready to react. So yesterday we ended things with John making it back into the building by shooting out the glass. He's lying on the on his stomach, and the first shot of this minute is great because you see his eyes like bulging out, and he realizes that, wait a second, I'm still attached to something, and it's starting to pull me backwards. You know, we.
One problem at a time, and that's what exactly. He's been doing. And unfortunately, time for him is 10 seconds till the next problem.
That's right. And then he flips himself over. He tries to, like, steady himself. And, you know, you see that he starts sliding backwards towards the window, you know, where there was all – you can see all these papers flying out the windows. And then he, like, tries to put his feet on something. I still can't figure out what that is.
It looks like cardboard to me. It looks like cardboard. It looks like some kind of thicker.
What would it be even used for? That's what I'm trying to think of.
I have no idea, and I have no idea why it's there, and it's helping.
And it's
him
got
brace
tons
himself.
Of glass. He's trying to brace himself, but it doesn't have any heft. So it's not really something that's going to help. I mean, what he's basically doing is pushing that further out. That's what he's doing.
It would go further out, or it would start to bow and bend. I mean, looking at it, you can see that that is what it is. I ended up getting deposit on a spot where I could see, like, the actual ripples of it. It's strong enough to, you know, to use for, I'm sure, whatever its purpose was. But at this point where he's bracing himself and trying not to go out the window, it would either go out the window or it would bend.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm not sure why it's there either. I have no idea.
Yeah, no, absolutely no clue. No clue whatsoever. And
all I know is there's more, you know, glass.
We see that he's feet. Exactly. There's lots of glass there. And he slowly gets pulled towards the window, and he's trying to get himself trying to extricate himself from that. And he realizes that what he needs to do, it takes him a few seconds to figure out that he needs to unravel this loosely bound fire hose around his waist. but he manages to get it. It's a good thing he didn't tie it too tight. You see, there you go.
Exactly. It served a purpose.
Yes.
It served a purpose. That's why it was in the script that way.
That is true. And he finally gets it off, and you can actually hear the whoosh of the fire hose, you know, shooting down, you know, or at 9.8 meters per second, you know, that type of thing.
Yeah, it goes really fast. If you're not paying attention, it's actually hard to see.
Yeah.
And then the cardboard also flies out right after along with it. It has, and you can see too, if you do actually want to see this and you're listening, pause the scene and you can actually see staples in the edge of it. So maybe there's something inside the cardboard that it's covering, but.
Meaning that maybe it's a box?
It's a painting that's covered in some kind of form of cardboard and has been shipped there and not taken out.
It also has things on the edges.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking at right now. I'm looking at the part where it actually, like, starts to go out the window and over the side.
I'm at 11 seconds looking at that. And
yeah, it's move it to 14, and you can see it literally slipping out of the window, and you can see it looks like it's something that's covering it, but it's cardboard of some kind that looks like it.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah. So
absolutely
maybe
no
it did
clue
have
what
more
it,
heft
what it's
to
for.
It. Yeah, so perhaps it had more heft to it than I initially surmised.
Yeah, And John is quite relieved as he's able to get out. You can see that he's exhausted. And they don't give us any time for us to start breathing, to catch our
Nope.
breath. Goes right back to the building, and we see the flames of the top of the building is just completely on fire. There are more explosions, and then they show us, I mean, again, the pyrotechnics are amazing. Pyrotechnics are amazing. And then we get a second or 2 second shot of hostages, running down the stairwell. And it's great, especially because you get to see that one of them gets actually hit in the head by some falling debris.
Poor hostages,
but
but they're escaping.
And he doesn't
But we
like
haven't
he doesn't
forgotten
even put
about
his
them, and
hand
that's very important.
he doesn't even put his hand on his head, like saying ouch or anything like that. He just keeps going.
Which I actually think is a very human emotion and reaction. It's, I don't care what's happening. I need to just get the heck out of here. This has been a nightmare. I'm going down. I mean, that I buy entirely. Or the actor was just so committed to his role of running down that he thought, nope, I wasn't told to react to stuff flying at my head, so I don't want to
Especially if
ruin
it's
the
probably like
shot.
foam or something like that,
But I'm gonna go with it's a human reaction that if you're that terrified, you're even if something's pretty heavy and you get injured, you have one goal. Like all of those hostages have one goal. They are gonna get down and out as quickly as they can. They want to get the H-E double hockey stick out of this bloody building.
Yeah, for sure. And then the shot changes, and we're back to Hans again, and we see Hans throw a bag of the bonds, and he goes, "Allez," which I actually looked up what that means in French, and it means go. So he's basically throwing to Christophe. Now, what's really funny here is that I used to always think that Christophe's name was Ali, because he says it. In this minute, today, and I think tomorrow, he says to him, Ali, Ali. So I thought his name was Ali, like
That makes
Prince
sense.
Ali, that type of thing. Prince,
That makes total sense.
but when you look on, when you look at the credits, you find out that he does have a real name, and we
By the
see.
way, between this movie and Beverly Hills Cop, I was, as a child, absolutely positively sure that for the rest of my life, all I was going to hear about was how bonds were the most resourceful thing that anybody ever stole ever. And then in the 90s, nobody really stole them in heist movies anymore.
Well, if you would have been listening at the beginning of this podcast where we talked about bearer bonds, they stopped making them because of this reason.
Aha!
And
See? Now I know.
there you go. And the funny thing is that you just mentioned Beverly Hills Cop. I just watched today all three Beverly Hills Cops movies, and when I saw the bearer bonds, they're the German bearer bonds, and I'm like, oh my God, and I knew that we're gonna be recording this tonight, and I was like, this is gonna be great. I'm gonna bring it up. I'm gonna talk about the fact that Beverly Hills Cop also has bearer bonds in it. Because what is the great thing about bearer bonds is that you don't have to show any proof that they belong to you. If you're holding a bearer bond, you can cash it in. That's the whole idea of it. But whatever, we're gonna get, there's a lot of flaws to their whole idea here. Of the whole plan, because the building doesn't collapse, and Hans had said that the whole idea is that they're going to be sifting through the rubble and they're going to think they're all dead. But how would they do that if we didn't even see the they didn't show the roof collapse. They saw that they showed that it was on fire, but we never see any of the floors collapse.
No, and it's
And
only implied in the timeline too.
they should have put, some of the bearer bonds up there also, if they want to make it plausible that okay, here we found some of the bearer bonds, so they must be dead. Because if they're going to sift through the rubble and they find bodies, obviously they'll find the bodies of the hostages, but they think that the terrorists are dead also, but where are the bearer bonds? Because
Exactly.
someone knows that they're going to be missing.
They're going to, yeah, and they wouldn't have to have a lot either.
Correct.
But they would need some. They would need some, and if they found them, that would be a lot more plausible.
Yeah.
But yeah. But they definitely wouldn't have the hostages anymore either, because they were down at least a couple flights of stairs.
Yeah.
When the top blew, at least at that
point. Because they were already at the vault. They were already at the vault because Eddie saw them when they're running down the stairs. So, and the vault's on the 30th floor. So let's say that the hostages are already at the 25th floor or whatever it is. I mean, again, this movie was made. I know we keep going back to this, but what can you do? You know, this movie was made 13 years before 9/11, when a building did collapse they completely collapsed. You know, when you're listening to Hans's plan, it makes it sound as if that's what he's expecting. He's expecting the building to implode because, look, they're leaving all of their drilling equipment. They're leaving the vault open. You'd think that they would have packed up all this stuff and put it back in the van, put it in the truck, whatever it is, you know, in order to get it out of there. But they're leaving lots of incriminating evidence. Again, they don't need it. But if their whole ploy is to make it seem as if they're dead, if they're dead, then they do need to have that there.
Some of it, they need to have at least
but,
some
but
of
something,
it.
But something is missing from their plan that would make it more plausible.
It's flawed. It's flawed, I think, in it's overthinking it. They didn't really need to do all of that. The actual plan to get the money out and what they did without John McClane all made sense. But I think the idea that they needed to make themselves seem like they died also and it was somehow an accident, that I think that was the flaw in the plan. Regardless of whether John McClane came and yippee-ki-yay'd all of their butts.
Correct.
I don't know that would have worked out for them anyway. I think it was just overreaching in general. I totally agree with you on that.
Yeah, it's a big question. And at this point, we then see that Christoph runs past Holly, who is dealing with smoke inhalation because she's sort of, you know, you see her coughing, trying to deal with all the smoke. So the smoke does get to the 30th floor. that we know happens. and then we see John is also already on the 30th floor. You know, he's like crouching as, you know, he goes through the pond, which has a waterfall, which looks really beautiful, even in this death and destruction.
It does.
You know,
it
looks
really,
really,
does.
Really nice. But like, what's the point of him wading through the pool? He couldn't go around it.
Maybe
is he trying to wash himself off?
Sad feet. Maybe he's washing the blood off his feet so he's not slipping and sliding around. I doubt that's what he was thinking. Yeah, I think that he went through it because it looks really good and it made a nice shot.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You see parts of the building, the ceiling collapse and stuff like that around him. So, you know, that also it's not happening in the waterfall because he's under rock.
Also, it's kind of a primal scene. It's essentially like
it's Predator.
He's in the jungle, on the mountaintop, going through whatever to come fight the big bad guy. It very much so is.
Yeah.
However, it's the sequence right after that where you get to see the chopper come down off the rooftop. That shot is probably my favorite shot in the whole movie.
Oh wow!
It looks great. It looks so great.
Yeah, because it you can tell that was done with a miniature. You know, and you see it like it hits its side and then starts, flipping over. And then again, going back to the editing that we're talking about, how the editing is so great here. Then it goes back to John, which it doesn't look like this is John. If you look from behind, his hair looks very different. It does not look like Bruce Willis.
No, it doesn't.
This is the stunt double.
You're right.
You idiots, you caught their stunt doubles. You know, you know, John's like standing in the waterfall, you know, watching things. And then, you know, he looks around, you know, you hear like this big thud. And then the Huey, then they show the outside and we see the helicopter just explode out to the window with a huge, huge flash. And as it's exploding, we see the inside of the building that it explodes and John jumps down into the water. So I guess it goes back to the fact that it's a good thing he was in the water.
Yeah,
there you go.
It was convenient again. You got to avoid the explosions.
Yeah. And as he's underwater, the shot goes back to the staging area, and we see Robinson reacting, and he goes, "Holy Christ!" and as you know, as they focus in on him, as you mentioned earlier, Al is just looking at him as if, you know, "I can't believe that this is what you're about to say." And then he goes, "I think we're going to need some more FBI guys."
It's really funny. It is. But his reaction,
it's one of my favorite lines of the movie. It's just amazing.
Did you just say that? I love that. It's a really great moment. It's so great.
Mm-hmm. And then it goes back to John again, and we see John emerging from the pool, and he starts screaming, and then he pulls his gun out as he's doing that, and starts moving in a direction. We're not sure where he's going or whatever it is.
He's unhinged at this point.
Yeah, I think he's a little discombobulated also at this point.
Yeah. He's just going wherever it is. He's got to go at this point.
Yeah.
He has one singular thought in his head, and it's Holly, and perhaps it will develop more after that.
Yeah, for sure. And basically, that's the way this minute ends. So, did you have anything else you want to say about this minute before we get into the script?
Nope.
All right.
I'm curious how this one went.
All right. So the script goes: McClane is yanked off his feet, dragged towards the window. And then we see the hose wheel slides down the side of the building. The hose plays out on the edge of the windowsill, dragging McClane towards his death. McClane claws at the floor, no help. Inches from the shattered window, he braces his legs against the sill, groans as he fights the weight of the hose and the reel. One foot slips. Only his already wounded foot keeps him indoors. He scrambles to untie his improvised rappelling rig, gets free just before the hose nozzle crashes out and into the great beyond. Winded, strength ebbing, he staggers to his feet, just in time for the roof to recoil from another staggering explosion. And then it goes back to the vault room and says, as Holly covers her head from falling plaster, the men work like automatons, piling up the bonds. McClane recovers from another aftershock, runs up the steps, is momentarily amazed to hear a ding from the elevator. So they don't even have the point here. We have to skip a little bit further to actually see the whole thing with Robinson and Powell, but it just says that they're open mouthed. We don't have in the script. We don't have the line of Robinson saying, "I think we're going to need more FBI guys."
I wonder if it was ad lib then.
It's very, very possible. Don't know.
If so, classic.
Yes. I mean, I find it interesting that it's not in here.
Yeah, I'm curious if that was an ad lib then.
Mm-hmm. Very well could be. And yep, that's all we got for the script. So every Wednesday we have a segment called Hans Hump Day, where my guests will give their top five Alan Rickman performances. So what have you got for us, Heather? Start with your number all five, right, and work your way up.
Five, not a big shocker. It's Professor Snape and Harry Potter.
Which one?
Wonderful. Oh, Prisoner of Azkaban, then. I love Azkaban. It's my favorite movie. Number four, Dogma, Metatron. Love it. Love him in it. And it's been too long since I've seen it. Number three.
You can always change that.
I know. Number three is Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. Whether you like the movie or not, I feel like the Sheriff of Nottingham steals the entire movie. Every scene he's in is absolutely wonderful. One of my favorite lines still is, "Cut his heart out with a spoon. Why? It's dull, you twit. It'll hurt more." I say it all the time. All the time. One of my favorite quotes in a movie ever. Number two, Galaxy Quest. Alexander Dawn. I love Galaxy Quest so much. It's the greatest love letter ever, and he is wonderful in it. He is so wonderful in it. And number one is Hans Gruber. But I loved him as a villain also in Quigley Down Under. That was a lot of fun. And I actually watched Rasputin just because he was in it, and he was delightful. So those were
I actually
honorable
didn't
mentions.
like Rasputin that much. I mean, he won an Emmy for that, didn't he? Or a Golden Globe.
Yeah, he did. And
the movie itself, I mean, his performance was nice, but the movie itself was really boring.
I haven't watched it since then. It was.
I saw it like a year or two ago. Yeah, it was an HBO movie.
Yeah. Yeah, I remembered. I saw it and I was like, Alan Rickman's in this, so I'll watch it. And he was phenomenal in it. And that's what I remember.
Okay.
I also like the story of Rasputin, but I haven't revisited the movie, so.
Right. Okay.
So that's us.
That is fair. That is fair. All right. So you want to tell people how they can get in touch with you?
Yep. You can find me on the socials under my pen name, HB Walsh. On Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. You can also find my first book in my trilogy. It's called The Prophecy Lost. You can find it on Amazon. You can search it under its title or under my author's name. And you can catch my new podcast that I host with Mark Armstead. It is a Buffy rewatch podcast called Word of Hellmouth. You can check it out on Patreon and under Rabbit Hole Podcasts.
All right. Excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, or you can go directly to my website, movierobminute.com. So, Heather, you feel like coming back again tomorrow?
I would love to. More explosions, more fire, more one-liners.
Well, what are you going to do when while the building falls around your ears? So. All right. So, until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay!